How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
A lovely Saturday, but rain on the way. And after going through a stretch where we've had hardly any rain, it is really, really dry. Unusual for May to be this dry. And you look at the weather map outside of the metro area, and there's red flag warnings again today. There is that big fire on the North Shore, and I know, Lindsey Brown, you like to go up to Duluth, and the North Shore is really cool. I mean, it is just, it's like another world up there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I just love Duluth, Superior, when you come over the hill and the big lake, and it is just spectacular. And then they drive up the North Shore. When we were kids, we, and adults too, we'd go up there, ski Spirit Mountain.
Oh.
And go up to Lutzen. Spirit Mountain's really good.
At nighttime, especially.
Lutzen's great. And the scenery is spectacular. But yeah, very, very dry around the state. Kind of a bummer to see that.
It's super
sad. Aren't you going to Duluth here pretty quick?
I am. That's the plan, at least. And I have a personal eye on that fire. My grandmother has like an over 100-year-old cabin just around like the Castle Danger area, not too far from the Rustic Inn Cafe. And so I heard that a couple people, I think from that establishment, that have lost their homes. I know my grandmother's nervous about the cabin, and, you know, homes and things are things and homes. But, you know, a lot of these things and places have been, you know, very rarely curated and touched. And fires are a natural occurrence in nature. There's a reason why we have them. But it's really unfortunate for that to be happening. And we're wishing everybody that's up there fighting against it, supporting the people that are impacted, all the best, all the love. Because, as you said, Steve, it's a very important area to us personally, and just to, I think, the fabric of the Minnesotan identity.
Yeah, just a great part of the world. You know, it is just not overrated one bit. Like I say, coming over that hill, even if going to Duluth for a hockey game or whatever, you know, you see the big lake, and it's just, it hits me every time. It's like, that's the real deal right there. You know, I even get a kick driving around Mille Lacs. We had a family friend that had a cabin between Outing and Reamer on Big Thunder Lake. And my dad was a teacher way back in the day, and this guy was a teacher. And we were very close family friends, and they would invite us up to their place in the summertime. And the drive around Mille Lacs, when you get to Mille Lacs and you can't see across, I always get a kick out of that for whatever reason.
Yeah, like, it's an ocean, but it's not. You're like, I'm looking out into the sea. It's not, but it is.
Yeah, still very cool. And then, of course, Lake Superior is spectacular. And I always remember, have you ever attempted a swim in Lake Superior?
Oh, I was baptized in those. Not literally, but I mean, as a child, we had the cabin is not lakeside. It's up the hill, but on the other side of the road, it's lakeside. And there was an elderly woman who I remember, we called her Grandma Nellie, and she was friends with my grandmother. She's been passed away many, many years ago, but she would allow us to go down on her property, go skip rocks, go collect rocks. Like, we have rocks from her beach from 30 years ago.
She had agates?
Who knows? I mean, when you're a kid, everything's an agate, right? And so I haven't been in them lately. I'll put my toes in almost every time I go up there. But, you know, a plunge might be in the future just to, like, you know, kind of refresh yourself. Maybe I could be reborn in some way.
It's stupid how cold it is.
Truly.
You know, it's one of those, even on a hot day in the summer, you know, wading into Lake Superior is like, it's kind of like if you've ever been out to California. And when my youngest daughter was looking at schools, we were in L.A. and we stayed in Santa Monica. that area is really cool. Anyway, we did the pier, and then, of course, went down to Venice Beach and so on and so forth.
All the beautiful people. It's
crazy how cold the Pacific Ocean is in the L.A. area. It's not like the Gulf of Mexico or the Atlantic in Florida or South Carolina or whatever. It's really cold. It's not like Superior cold, but it is super cold.
People surf in Lake Superior too, Steve. Have you seen that?
Yeah, for sure.
Like the true hardcores. I'd like some Santa Clarita dietary person to come up here and be like, go surf Lake Superior. Tell me how the swell is, bro. Like,
wait. What is Santa Clarita?
I don't know.
Diet?
That's a TV show like that Drew Barrymore was on, and so I was just thinking like Santa Clara. So I went to Clarita Diet, and it was just, you know, some random Colton from California who's a surfer. I'd like them to surf the good old Gitche Gumee. Okay.
Yeah. No, it is a great spot. So thoughts. But it gets back to the weather and how dry it's been. And it looks like we're going to get one of those much-needed soaking rains around the area. Now, we don't want any severe weather, but you heard the weather a moment ago. And I just wanted to take a moment and do a deep dive on the weather. And by the way, no Doug today. Doug's under the weather. We're hoping to have him back one more time because we got ball games the next 2 weeks. I'll be off the next 2 weeks, so no show. And then there's a lot of 1 o'clock starts in June. So we are hoping to get Doug on today, but Doug is under the weather. So Doug Swinhard fans, be aware of that. I think he'll be fine, but just under the weather today. But back to what we're seeing in our neck of the woods, and I mentioned the red flag warnings, and this is not that far north of the cities. And the red flag warnings that are up for today give you an idea from St. Cloud North, Hinckley, Brainerd, Fergus Falls, etc. And then we already mentioned some of the fires along Lake Superior. They have a frost advisory for the Arrowhead. So very cold, very dry, but that is going to change. And it looks like we could see some significant rain over the next couple of days, starting tomorrow and continuing into Monday and Monday night, well beyond the Twin Cities metro area. Here in the cities, they're talking about between a tenth and a quarter during the day on Sunday. I don't think it's going to be a complete washout on Sunday. But by Sunday night, showers and thunderstorms likely, maybe a thunderstorm, between 3/4 and 1 inch are possible here in the cities. And some areas in this kind of changes, depending on where the front sets up, etc. Southeastern Minnesota, 2+, and some parts of central Minnesota and northern Minnesota could see 2+ as well. With all of this. And then quite a bit cooler this week. Cloudy, 58 on Tuesday. Wednesday is sunny, 61. Thursday is sunny, 68. And then on Friday, sunny and 71. So warm one today, 80 degrees. West winds at 16, gusting to 23 miles an hour. Now, before we went on the air, Lindsay, you mentioned that you mowed. I mowed earlier today as well. But there really wasn't a lot of mowing because it was so dry.
Yours was dry? Oh my goodness. I had some moisture gathering at the bottom, at least of the front yard. We hadn't cut it yet this year, and this was the first time through. I didn't bag it. I like to leave the clippings behind, you know, to incentivize growth.
Good thing.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Sarah was like, I trust your thought. I'm like, I trust my thought as well. And so it did take me super long. It's kind of easy on our front yard. In the backyard, there's hills, there's trees. I still haven't figured out how to quite mow that correctly, but I've done it once, and that's all I got to do, right? See, that's my mow job for the summer.
No. Yeah, I am sure your neighbors were thrilled to see you out there.
We were the last ones.
And now they're keeping their fingers crossed. Maybe this will become a habit for them.
Let's set a new standard for the summer that will be 2026.
Now, I'm not saying you know, there's some people that want the private club turf in their yard.
The Kentucky bluegrass, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really need that, or bent grass front yard or whatever. I don't really need that. But I do like to keep it up, and I do kind of get a kick out of it. And, you know, it's something to do.
Yeah. You got to have good tunes or a good podcast. I was listening to some hyper pop yesterday. That really pushed me through. I had a great time.
Yeah, I usually, when I'm mowing, I put on a playlist of my favorite tunes.
K-pop?
Years. No.
But you're the official chaperone for the Thompson and Brennan family.
I get enough K-pop in my chaperone duties to, I generally don't choose. Not that I hate K-pop. Like I say, all these acts, you know, you look at what goes into this, and the dance, the singing, the writing, it is really impressive.
It's an industry. They are pumping out these people. They create these people in an image. And so it's a whole thing, and I'm glad that people find joy in it.
You know, and I know the music isn't for me, but last Saturday night we went to see the Billie Eilish concert film. She is an unbelievable talent.
She is.
She's 24 now, kind of broke into the music biz at 16, her and her brother, and to the point where she's doing worldwide tours and still seems to be a really grounded, decent human being. I'm really impressed by Billie Eilish. And like I say, you know, the music isn't necessarily for me, but the concert film and, you know, what they put into that, I was really, really
impressed.
How
did she get James Cameron to sign it? That's when you know you're legit, when you get James Cameron out of his Avatar, you know, bunker house, where he's been working on this for like 20 years and he's still got 20
more. Yeah, he only directed Titanic.
Well, I know,
Avatar,
but Avatar is really the only thing that he's done since Titanic, but that's my exact thing. Like, you know, to research Titanic, he was doing all of those submarine dives. Remember when the submarine, like, collapsed on itself a couple years ago, and those billionaires, he was telling them, like, I was doing this. I understand, like, what they were doing is wild, what they put together. We know that story. But, like, how is it James Cameron's like, you know what, Billie Eilish? Yep. Like, I was just shocked that he took the project, but maybe that's something he does on the side.
Yeah, and they really didn't get into that, but James Cameron was part of the film, and it was a documentary, so they would talk to Billie Eilish behind the scenes at the show, getting ready for the show, all of that. Fans, you know, kind of your typical concert film, if you will, very well done. And the way they use technology is they were able to film a show, and I believe it was in England, in Manchester, at a sports arena. And what was cool about it is it was in 3D, but the cameras weren't intrusive. It wasn't like there was a guy holding a camera running around on stage. I think the technology and what James Cameron and Billie Eilish envisioned for this film, it turned out really, really cool. And the 3D was a great effect as well for this concert film. So, yeah, just a tremendous talent. And I don't even think it's still in theaters. I think it was kind of a weekend long deal and then gone. But
it'll be on streaming in 48 hours.
Yeah.
Don't have to wait.
Quick break. We'll come back a little bit later in the hour. Disappointing end of the Timberwolves season. Chris Hine will join us at 3:35. And once again, for Tech Talk fans, my apologies. Doug not feeling well today. But we'll have him back as the summer moves on, Twins schedules permitting. By the way, Twins and Brewers on the radio tonight. Lineup card at 5:30. They're on the home of the Twins. News Talk, 830-WCCO.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
What was your favorite part of the NFL schedule release?
Oh, my God.
Lindsay, I had to bring it up today because I know the draft, and people will stand around with 300,000 of their friends in a parking lot outside a stadium or in Kansas City, what, at the Union Depot or wherever it's been, or at Lambeau, out in the parking lot at Lambeau, and watch him announce names of players. I completely don't understand that. But the NFL schedule release and schedule release show, ay.
It's like social media Christmas, though. It's not even like an event. You got to see what these teams are putting out. Like, well, that's how much of sickos these people are. They get really excited. Like, the team's going to make a video. Like,
well,
it's funny,
and
though.
I get it. You know, they're trying to create hype and stay year round, and it's hard to argue with their success. But then the formula follows where then you feel obligated to break down the schedule here in May and project how your team, whoever that is, whether it's the Vikings or the Packers or whomever, on how they're going to do this season, not knowing who's even going to be starting week one in a lot of circumstances. Will there be injury? And it's just the most preposterous speculation. And I know we do that, you know, a ton in sports media anyway, but breaking down the schedule, it's hilarious. I think every year I've looked at the schedule and tried to project, I always come up with the same. Whenever it was a 16-game schedule, yeah, they'll be 9-7. Or they'll be 8-8.
I haven't found a loss
and
yet.
And now that it's 17 games. Yeah, I kind of get back to the old. I always end up in the same thing because in any given week, here it is real quickly. Week one, Green Bay at home. Then week two at Chicago, then at Tampa Bay, home to Miami. They're going to be horrible. At New Orleans, bye week. Then they host the Colts at Lions. They get the Bills here. That's an intriguing game.
That's fun. Last time they came, it was really fun for, like, really the back half, right?
Yeah.
One of the greatest comebacks of all time. Or wait, that was Indy. Just kidding.
But, yeah, Josh Allen, I mean, that's always good. Hopefully he's
I just remember Eric healthy. Kendricks forcing a fumble, like, right on the Bills' one-yard line, and I think we won a game in the last couple of years. It's very distinct. I loved Eric Kendricks.
At Green Bay in the middle of November, they play in Mexico City. And then host Atlanta. You know, all in all, I'm not that excited about the opponents on this schedule in reality. And then in December, host Carolina at New England, host Detroit, host Washington, visit the New York Jets in the Meadowlands, and then get the Bears at home in the final week of the regular season. And it's amazing. And the reason I bring it up, whenever I go through the schedule, when it comes out and it's the middle of May, I'll say, yeah, they'll be 9-8. Or they'll be 8-9. But in reality, you have no idea. Will we get a good Kyler Murray?
Eh.
Will the O-line be improved? I mean, who knows?
Who knows? So it's like, let's try to make this seem important, right? That's kind of the economy we're in now. Like, every piece of news needs to have all of the teeth, all of the hooks, the staying power. And the NFL has mastered their ability to stay in the news cycle. There really is no offseason. Like, the fact that we're even talking about the how preposterous this is part of the whole plan.
That's exactly right. We should have ignored it.
Well, we can't. Like, we can't. We have too many dollars dedicated. Like, the NFL is literally, like, floating the entertainment industry right now, if you think about how much money that league generates with TV contracts and everything. That's one of the biggest businesses we have, and one that's working, I guess.
Well, and And speaking of that, more pay-per-view, and there was a lot of hand-wringing about a Green Bay game being only on Netflix.
Oh, is it a holiday game?
I think so.
Yeah, probably.
But Senator Tammy Baldwin, and there's a lot of outrage over this. And in reality, to give the NFL credit, they've done a good job. If you're a Viking fan and you live in market, you live the greater Twin Cities metro area, I would assume this is true in cities all over the state, St. Cloud, Duluth, even in the Fargo-Moorhead area, Rochester, Mankato, etc. All of these regional centers that have television, over-the-air television, the chances are you are getting the game still on free over-the-air TV. Because when the game is, for instance, like an ESPN game or an NFL Network game on Thursday night, they do put that in home markets on over-the-air TV. So I think they've done a pretty good job. But now with more and more games going to, for instance, Amazon Prime.
Streaming services.
Yep, paid streaming services, where you actually need to give them your money or you need to be a Prime subscriber or whatever.
No, thank you.
That, you know, people are outraged by it. And it's just flat out the way of the world. And I don't know what the government could jump in and do and legislate against that. You know what I'm saying? That there's a limit to what government can do. And in this case, if these leagues and these teams say, you know what, at some point in the future, and I still believe this, 100% of the games will be only available on pay-per-view, that you will be paying money to watch this product. And in a roundabout way, I guess you are. Unless you have an antenna and it's hooked up to a TV and, you know.
Well, and you're not leaving space for Neuralink implementation if Elon has his way. We might just pump this straight into the stem, right?
And here's the thing. Think of the value in that. If you get Neuralink, you get NFL Sunday ticket for free.
Right? What a selling point. You know that somebody is sold by that.
Millions of people would march out to get an implant with the idea that you would get every NFL game through the implant.
What a horrendous thought.
Yeah.
And potential future, literally.
Yeah, I'm sorry we went there.
No. 3:32. Well, it's happening, Tech Talk.
3:32. Quick break. We'll update the weather. And then Chris Hine will join us. Tough end of the year. Tough end of the line for the Timberwolves. They got blown out by San Antonio on Friday night. What's next? We'll get into that with Chris here on News Talk. 830-WCCO.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
It was ugly. Friday night, Target Center, San Antonio jumped on the Timberwolves and really never let them up off the deck. And the Spurs advanced. The Timberwolves season is over. And a lot to chew on following that game and that series. And Chris Hine joins us. He's covered the team all year for the Star Tribune. Chris, good to visit with you. Thanks again for the time. Chris?
Yes.
Oh, that was ugly Friday night.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it was. Sorry if it came out a little choppy there. It was the third year in a row that they were down 30 in the game that ended their season. You know, it's crazy to think that the season has ended that way each time. You know, I don't know what it kind of is in those moments that they just kind of let go of the rope like that. But, you know, each of these last three seasons have ended very similarly.
Yeah. They were able to get to the conference finals 2 years in a row, come up short. first and foremost, tip your cap to San Antonio. This is a very good young team. Victor Wembanyama, 100% as advertised. I mean, the Spurs are going to be a force to reckon with for years to come.
Yeah, that's, I think, what the larger existential questions now are facing this franchise. Is you faced the Thunder a season ago. You lost pretty convincingly to them. You faced the Spurs this season. It went six, but three of those games were absolute blowouts. And for the foreseeable future, they are the powers of the Western Conference. How do you compete with that? What do you have to do to retool the roster, figure out a way to play that can take down both of these teams? Because, you know, they're not going away. And I think the Wolves need to ask some hard questions of themselves this summer. What do we need around Anthony Edwards moving forward? What kind of player is going to maximize him? And, you know, honestly, scoring's been a big problem. The offense has been a big problem in both of these series. So I think they really need to figure out how they want to play on offense moving forward.
Yeah, Chris, that brings up the obvious, and that are some of the players. You got Rudy Gobert. And, you know, Rudy, while a very good defensive player, can be an offensive liability. You've got a contract that's probably untradeable at this point. I would find it hard to believe that there would be a suitor. And then another one that really comes to mind among this core group is Julius Randle. It just doesn't appear to be working here.
Yeah, I would take a different take on Gobert's contract. I actually think that he does have trade value because I think he's not on a max deal. He's making in the mid-30s. And I think that there's a lot of teams out there, especially in the Eastern Conference, who could look at bringing in Rudy Gobert and it would instantly upgrade their defense in a significant way. So I think that there can be a market for him. Julius Randle, I would agree that I think the market is a little thinner there. You know, would it take something to get off of Julius Randle's contract the same way that, you know, kind of was with the Knicks when the Wolves took him? So I'm not sure. Listen, 8 years covering the NBA, nothing surprises me. No deal, no trade, anything surprises me after covering the league up close. You never know what teams are looking for, what their priorities are, what their salary cap situation is like. So there's a lot of moving pieces more than just firing up the ESPN trade machine on the internet. But I would tend to agree with you that I think a change to the front court is likely needed after what we saw the last two postseasons.
You know, it became a reoccurring theme this year about it being a moody group, that it was just at times a very unpleasant regular season. Here's a team that have been to the conference finals 2 years in a row. They have Anthony Edwards. They have a lot of other star power. They have an energized fan base. But it didn't seem fun at all at times.
No, and that was kind of a theme that emerged from the exit interviews today, was this team was way too up and down with its collective mood. And, you know, I think people might be quick to say that, this team had moody players. Well, they must be just talking about Julius Randle, who's well-known to be a moody player. But no, this team has a roster full of moody guys. Everybody at some point in time during the season was likely in a bit of a funk. And I think battling that collective mood, finding the room to be happy for your teammates when it's maybe not your night minutes-wise or points-wise, was a challenge for them at times. They admitted as much today, earlier in interviews. But ultimately, it didn't derail the season. You know, they came away from the season largely liking each other personally and things like that. But, you know, I think to get to where you want to go, to have a championship or DNA, it's got to be a little more connected.
Yeah, and for the Timberwolves, in reality, they still have a lot of pieces that a lot of teams in the East or the West that aren't San Antonio, that aren't Oklahoma City, would love to have Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels. I mean, you start right there. Nas Reed's a nice piece. Dante DiVincenzo went down with the injury, it goes without saying, but, you know, he certainly was a contributor. So there's still a lot to like about this team going forward. The challenge will be, how do you retool and give them a chance in a seven-game series to ultimately knock off San Antonio or beat Oklahoma City in a seven-game series?
That's just it. I wrote it in my story today. I think the Wolves can come away from the season saying they were the third-best team in the Western Conference. The problem is the gap between 1-2 and then 3 is pretty big. And it's trying to figure out, how do you punch up and get into that stratosphere? And they, and, you know, assuming one of these teams goes on to win the title, they and 28 other teams in the league are going to be asking the same questions. You know, so they're not alone in that regard. And that, I guess in that way, they're one of the closest to maybe being into that, in that level, right? Maybe a couple teams in the East. We'll see how the rest of the playoffs play out here. But, you know, I think you just have to ask yourself philosophically now, what do you need to beat these guys? Where are they the weakest and most vulnerable? And if your goal is to compete with them for a championship, you have to go out and figure out a way to get it. And does that require maybe like a soft reset for a year while you, you know, accrue more assets or what have you, right? Develop young players like Yoan Berenguer, and whatever draft pick you may get this year. They do have their first round picks. So, you know, we'll see. But right now, I think those are the questions that are being asked. And, you know, free agency is a little over a month away, and we'll have answers to that within the next 6 weeks.
Chris Hine joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. He covers the Timberwolves for the Star Tribune online at startribune.com. Anthony Edwards, 8 minutes to go in the game down there. Handshakes, congrats to the San Antonio Spurs. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I don't put too much on that. I saw some people online, you know, saying that. His aunt being aunt, he went over, shook their hands. He didn't leave the floor at that point in time. He went back and sat on the bench and joined his teammates. But I don't really take too much into it. The game was over at that point in time.
Yeah,
for so sure. a little unusual, but ultimately, I'm not reading too much into it.
All right, Ant, what about him going forward? You did a book on him. He is certainly a big name in this league. Still a young kid. Where does he need to improve?
Good question. You know, one of the hallmarks of Ant's career and one of the credits to his development is every year he's come back from the summer with something that has been added to his game or has greatly improved. 2 years ago, it was his three-point shot. Took a big jump forward. This past year was working on his mid-range game and being better in clutch situations in the fourth quarters of games. He's made these tangible improvements every year. He didn't quite know what that might be this year. We asked him that after the game. He wasn't sure, he said. I think priority number one is just getting his body back right. This was the most injured he has ever been in a season. It started with a hamstring pull a couple of games into the season. He dealt with a lingering toe problem. Then he had the one knee injury, then the other knee injury. So it was a lot of injuries this year for Ant that he largely gutted through. You know, so I think just prioritizing his body in the immediate offseason is where he's at.
Yeah, and Chris, can maybe this series on some level be summed up? Ant wasn't 100%, no Dante DiVincenzo, that, you know, it's a couple of key guys. And certainly Ant, you know, fighting injuries and being able to come back and help. But if you have Ant at 100%, does that make a difference?
I think it could. You know, I certainly think so. And, you know, I think Dante's presence was sorely missed in this series, especially with the way they were playing Ant, doubling him across half court. Just having Dante there to be an outlet on the wing for potential open threes would have alleviated some of the pressure off of Ant in this series. But, you know, I don't know. I tend to think that the series, the Spurs, I think, still had the better team at the end of the day. It would have taken a lot to beat them, especially the fact that the Wolves did lose three of these games very convincingly. They did not appear to be close. And I don't know that it would have alleviated the problems facing the Randall Gobert front court offensively against this team at the end of the day, too.
All right, Chris, final question, and that is about Chris Finch. Certainly a lightning rod coach in any sport, whatever it is, when there is a failure, a playoff exit earlier than fans maybe expect, etc., underachieving team, they can be the lightning rod. That is the way it goes. What about Chris Finch going into this offseason?
Yeah, every indication he'll be back. You know, he spoke at exit interviews today. And, you know, he's well-regarded around the league. And, you know, 5 playoff series victories in the last 3 seasons, nothing to sneeze at. One of them undermanned against Denver. So, you know, along with the maybe underperforming in the regular season, there tends to be moments where, you know, he's helped guide them to playoff series victories when they've come in as the underdog multiple times here in his tenure. So, you know, there's good and bad with any coach. And I think at the end of the day, you have to weigh what's good, what's bad, what you can live with, what you can't live with. And I just think, you know, it's a very dangerous game to play sometimes when if you hit that button, you start shuffling through coaches. You know, maybe it ends up like the Knicks where they get back to the conference finals with Mike Brown, you know, after moving on from Tom Thibodeau. But then you also have a team like the Bucks who fired Mike Budenholzer, I think maybe 1 year removed, 2 years removed from winning a championship. And they never found the right head coach after that to pair with Giannis. So it's a very tricky thing to do. You have to really better be sure you know what you're doing if you're going to move on from a coach who has had playoff success in this league. That is not always a guarantee among coaches that they have what it takes to you know, take you from an underdog and win a playoff series.
Well, Chris, always great to visit with you. A long year, great job on the beat, as always.
Appreciate it, Steve. Always good to talk to you.
There he is, Chris Hine, covers the Timberwolves for the Star Tribune Online, startribune.com. Quick break, we'll come back. PGA Championship outside of Philly, and we'll have a leaderboard update, some big names and some not-so-big names near the top of a very crowded leaderboard here at News Talk, 830-WCCO. A compressed leaderboard at Aronim Inc., outside of Philly and the PGA Championship. Let me just start by saying PGA should be in August. The fact that they rearrange their schedule to avoid conflicting with the NFL and creating the FedEx Cup playoffs, nobody really cares.
Wasn't it originally for the Olympics, though?
Yeah, but go back.
I agree.
PGA in August, and then you can still, out of the PGA in the middle of August, have a couple events leading up to the Tour Championship in Atlanta at East Lake and hand out your big prize Labor Day weekend before the NFL starts. There's a way to do the PGA in August. But anyway, quite a leaderboard. People complaining about the course. They always do. U.S. Open. PGA is always, the course is too easy. It's not this. They made it too hard with the U.S. Open. But John Rahm, Aaron Rye, and Chris Goddard, your leader at 5 under par. Folks still on the course. Matty Schmid, Nick Taylor at 4-under, Rory a 4-under 66, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Reed in a group at 3-under par. Scotty got to 3-under. He's at 2-under. And then you got another group, Brooks Koepka, Ricky Fowler, Hideki Matsuyama, all at 1-under par. So there are a ton of players within 5 of the lead here in the third round of the tournament. We got to run. I'm late. News and weather next.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.